Now, if you are a regular listener to Mooney Goes Wild, you know we've featured beavers many times on this programme. Vet Dr. Sean McCormick, who's Irish but based in London, is responsible for returning beavers to a place called Paradise Fields in Ealing, very close to Heathrow Airport, for the first time in over 400 years. We made a documentary about that also. Good news, because the beavers he put in there have given birth. And Sean is going to give us an update now. Let's talk to Sean McCormick now from Paradise Fields in London. Hello, Sean. How are you? So give us an update, if you would, please.
So the beavers have settled in here at Paradise Fields really, really well. They've kind of had an effect much quicker than we thought they would. So in terms of their flooding mitigation, they've built 7 dams now. And they're holding back an absolute ton of water. I'm looking at their first dam they made, and they've recently started to make renovations on it, and it's holding back, I would say, a pool of water that is 1.5 metres higher than downstream and probably 5 times the width of the channel downstream. So a really big body of water, and we're seeing improvements in the biodiversity here, from the aquatic invertebrate life right up to birds and even a new species of bat this summer. So they've had a quick and really marked impact.
Are you honestly telling me that the introduction of beavers can affect the bat species in an area? How?
Well, there's been a recent study actually published over here by Beaver Trust and one of the universities, where they're monitoring the diversity and abundance of bats in a beaver wetland pre and post beaver reintroduction. And what the beavers are doing basically is their dam systems basically act as giant filtration. So they're clearing the water. There's more light getting into the water because the sediment is percolating out of the water column. They are cleaning the water because the pollutants and things are coming out. We've seen over 50% reduction in phosphates and nitrates in the system. We've seen the appearance of invertebrates like freshwater shrimp that are less tolerant to poor water conditions. So they're increasing the food web from the bottom up. More aquatic invertebrates, more flies and flying insects hatching out of the water means more food for different types of bats and higher numbers of bats. So we had soprano and common pipistrelles here before, the occasional noctule. Never recorded Daubenton's bat, the water bat here, and it's showed up this summer. So beavers basically provide the building blocks for lots of other species to thrive.
Now, Sean, you're giving me a very positive news story here. You're not going to say anything negative. You, after all, were responsible for reintroducing the beavers to that part of the UK. Is there no negative effects on the ecosystem or on biodiversity as a result of introducing beavers?
I have to be honest, there can be negative effects. It depends on what your priorities are. So, you know, if beavers move into a dry meadow habitat and start to canalise the wetland out into that dry meadow, you know, you may lose certain plant species because it becomes a wet meadow. So they do have an impact. And depending on your framing, that can be positive or negative if you were, you know, a big fan of those dry meadow plant species. So look, of course, beavers can have negative effects. It depends on your framing. So if beavers move into an area of habitat that is dry meadow, for example, and they start to channel and canalize the wetland into that meadow, that will change to a wetland meadow and you will have loss of certain species. So depending on what your priority is, you could say that beavers have changed biodiversity for the better, or they have changed biodiversity for the worse at a certain location. So it's site specific, but overall the benefits beavers provide in terms of capturing carbon, flood mitigation, drought mitigation, increasing biodiversity, improving water quality, far outweigh some of the negative impacts. But we can't ignore the negative impacts, because beavers can be a problem species, again, on a location-by-location basis. If you're a farmer and beavers move onto your land and they block up drainage channels in your fields and things and affect your profit margin by flooding the wrong areas, you know, of your crops, then that's a significant economic impact of beavers. And I think, although, you know, I wax lyrical about how wonderful beavers are, we have to be honest that they can come with some management challenges. And that's what we're trying to show at the Ealing Beaver Project, is how we can live harmoniously alongside them. And most of the fixes are actually quite simple and quite cheap. But we have to, if we're bringing back this species, we have to talk about that. And the governments have to have a framework in place for managing beavers, either compensating people who are affected by beavers negatively, or incentivizing people to have beavers, especially in the upper tributaries of rivers where they're going to have most effect.
Sean, I wanted to ask you two questions. I mean, just for the listeners in general. First of all, looking at the thing as you described it, they could they chew down, knock down trees and they make a dam, and you were describing the pond behind it. Now, that must have flooded the place. There was a river before, and now this thing is much wider. So you had to have a floodplain that could be afford to be flooded. And in Paradise Fields, where you're doing this, obviously this was the case. So that was the first one. So by definition, they're going to cause flooding because they're stopping the water in the river from moving, and then you make a pond out of it. Is that not right?
That's right, yeah, yeah. So Paradise Fields, we're quite lucky. There's a small brook that runs through and it goes into a larger pond at the end until it leaves the site and goes into urban Greenford. There's plenty of space here for reconnection of the brook with its floodplain. And I think what we've done often is we haven't given rivers and streams enough space to connect with their floodplain in times of flood. And beavers do that quite naturally and quite build in kind of resilience, where they're elevating the water table and they're allowing lateral flow of water across out into the floodplain in times of flood, and then releasing it slowly again. But they do need some space. And one of the solutions maybe to welcoming beavers back is to just have river buffers, where we allow, you know, a 10 metre strip either side of rivers to be natural and to have beavers doing their thing. They don't tend to leave more than 20 metres of good habitat either side of water. And if we just stopped kind of farming right up to the edge of our rivers, we could solve a lot of the problems with flooding and water quality and leaching of chemicals into them and things like that. So it does require a bit of tolerance and a new mindset change with society if we're going to welcome these animals back.
Now, the second question then, you said this pond then was there. Then somehow all the pollutants were being washed out of the water, all the chemicals and phosphates. But if the water is in a pond, then it's slow, it's not moving fast, so do they not all just sink to the bottom? How can you make a pond with still water and this is going to wash out the chemicals by the same token? Can you describe the mechanics of this to me, if you wouldn't mind?
Sure. So with the kind of physical sediment in the water column, the slowing of the flow is allowing that to sink down into the sediment and be drawn down into the sediment layer and kind of be trapped there. So water flowing into a series of dams in a beaver wetland is dirtier or more opaque on the inflow than it is after going through all those dams. So it's a mechanical filter that takes out a lot of the solids in the water.
Yeah, but
those,
it doesn't take
dissolved
it,
solids.
It doesn't actually take it out. It only sinks to the bottom. The sludge is at the bottom or full of it.
That's right, yeah. Right,
that makes sense, yeah. Well, of course, it's out of the water. Yeah. I'm just trying to wonder where did it go, and it just sank to the bottom, and there it is, and the sludges and the muds at the bottom of the newly created pond, and it's out of the water column, and it's not affecting the plant growth, and it's not encouraging all this eutrophication that you get when it's suspended in the water.
Exactly, and the other way that I've recently kind of looked into is because beavers are opening up the light to the wetland, you're getting more plant diversity and you're getting more plant growth. Those plants are, the diversity of plants and number of plants are sucking up a lot of that nutrient as well. So you're getting a reduction in time of things like phosphates and nitrates in the system overall, because they're adding a kind of a mosaic of habitats and much more kind of soft vegetative growth that's utilising that nutrient source. Rather than what we had here before was described pre-beaver release as pretty much an ecological dead zone, because it was just a very, very shaded brook with very little algal growth, very little light, very few aquatic invertebrates, and high, high nutrients that couldn't be utilised by the very few plants that could survive in that system. So we're already seeing it springing into life, and month on month, you know, over 50% reduction in phosphates and nitrates from the inflow to the outflow.
Richard.
Sean, congratulations on managing to do that. I mean, there's no such thing nowadays in Ireland. Well, it's not quite true to say there's no such thing, but there are very few genuine rivers left. They're kind of tamed, glorified canals. They're domesticated, our rivers are. And here the beavers are returning to give us a real river back again. Now, nothing stays the same forever. Everything changes. So if you left that place to its own devices, you would get reed beds and vegetation, and the whole thing would become ultimately, I suppose, a fen and then a bog or something like that. But the beavers, it seems, are preventing that from occurring. They are holding it in its riverine situation. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, to a certain extent, Richard, they are. But I would describe them as sort of agents of change. And in a natural condition, obviously, we have these five, now seven beavers actually, because they've had two more babies this year. But we've got this family of beavers behind a fenced enclosure. They've got 8 hectares to play with, and we're monitoring what that looks like on an urban setting. they, in natural conditions where there's populations of beavers, they will move into an area and they will move out of an area when they've exhausted some of the food resources. And multiple beaver colonies doing that over time means that there's a patchwork or kind of a dynamic flow state of habitats from succession into woodland, from wetland, and then clearance and then growth of new plants and new habitats again. And once the beavers leave, we get that succession happening again. So in the natural context, 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 years ago, when beavers and large herbivores were around, they were keeping the habitats constantly in a kind of a dynamic state of flux and change, and keeping a mosaic of different habitats for lots of different animals and plants to thrive. Nowadays, you're right, we have almost de-wilded our rivers, and I think that beavers are part of the solution at rewilding our rivers and allowing them to act more naturally. But again, on a site-by-site basis, I've been to, I would say at this stage, probably 20 or 30 different beaver sites, and they're all slightly different depending on the hydrology and the geography of the site and what the beavers are doing there with what tree species and things. So they're really, really complex engineers, and they can turn a fairly uniform habitat into one that has features of lots and lots of different habitats year on year, with that changing over time.
Now, Sean, you mentioned babies. That means that your population is going to expand and beavers are going to wander out of there and seek alternative sites and so forth. How much control have you? Is it a genie out of the bottle kind of situation where almost anything can happen and you can do nothing about it? Or have you some kind of way of ensuring that it develops to your satisfaction?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're absolutely delighted that we had two baby beavers, or kits, born this year. We were thrilled to see that happen, because it's really proof of concept that the beavers can live here in an urban environment quite happily alongside people and do just fine. But you're right, this is not a project that's trying to re-establish beavers across Greater London. It's really a demonstration project of how we can live alongside them again and how we can manage them in the urban context, because beavers are already out of the bottle or out of the bag. There's up to 3,000 beavers now living free and wild lives in England alone, up to 500 in Kent alone, and they're in North Kent, which is not too far from Greater London. So we said to Natural England when we applied for this licence that the beavers are already on their way back, and they will be coming back into towns and cities of their own accord, and we should try in a controlled way, in a licensed enclosure, learn how to manage them in the urban context. So we do have a good handle on our beavers, and we will be managing their population. In fact, this autumn, or like in the next couple of months actually, we are going to be trapping and taking out the adolescent female, because she's coming up to 3 years of age and she will want to strike out on her own, and obviously we have a fence in the way. So we're going to be bringing her to a new beaver project in Wales, and the Beaver Trust have helped us to find her a boyfriend and start a new colony of beavers in Wales.
And they're amenable to matchmaking like that, are they? You can decide you're going to marry this fellow and we're taking you up there and I hope you'll live happily ever after, that sort of scene. Or have they got an element of choice about it?
Unfortunately, at the moment, legally, you know, to kind of do this, we do have to do a bit of matchmaking and a bit of population management. Under natural conditions, the males would disperse from their parental kind of territory a lot further than the female offspring, and that creates a bit of genetic mixing and things. So we do have to kind of curate that process. But if we put single female beaver and a single male beaver of the right age into the right kind of habitat with space to get away from each other and also to kind of figure each other out, then things normally go to plan. And there has been a couple of incidents where, you know, beavers have been put together and they don't get on, and they've had to be rematched with another mate.
So your beavers are actually introduced into a headstream, into small rivers. You wouldn't put them into a great big river halfway down the Thames. They're actually going into little streams that feed into a big stream, and by causing their dam and their pond at that height above, it stops the river flooding then when it rains. Is that it? They don't go on a great main river. They go on tributaries going in.
Well, they will go anywhere, Aina, but they have the most effect in terms of their flood mitigation and holding back the water if they're on headwaters upstream. So we're on the Costons Brook here that runs into the River Brent, that runs into the River Thames. So this is where they're having most impact. Downstream of Paradise Fields was dogged with problems with flooding. And already this winter, you know, we've seen a reduction in that. But they can live on big rivers, and this is the interesting thing. They behave very differently on big rivers where they have deep water. The only reason beavers dam is not to provide flood mitigation for us or improve biodiversity, you know, elsewhere. It's actually just to create deep water refuge for themselves that they feel safe in. So if beavers do colonise, you know, every river in England, and they'll be on the downstream low-lying floodplain rivers as well, but they will burrow into the banks and they won't make any dams because they don't need to make dams if they've already got the deep water.
So you must be delighted that your beavers have had babies, are you?
I'm thrilled. I was saying last year I'm a beaver daddy and now I'm a beaver granddaddy. Absolutely delighted.
There's a suggestion that we could possibly bring beavers into Ireland. If you had the chance to bring them into Ireland, where would it be? Or would you do it at all?
Well, this is the big question, Derek, and it's a controversial one. And I think my answer right now would be I wouldn't do it, because there's great debate about whether Ireland ever had beavers at all, whether they made it across that land bridge before, you know, the last ice age retreated and things. There's a lot of mammals that made it to Britain and never made it to Ireland. And beavers are on that list because we don't have any archaeological evidence of beaver presence in Ireland. So in these times of biodiversity crisis and things, it can be very controversial to release a native species that's been extinct in a country like the beaver has here for 400 years. But to bring in a species that is arguably non-native is kind of uncomfortable and you know, could cause problems. And it's important to say that these beavers coming back in England for kind of the last 20, 25 years and Scotland, they have caused some issues, and they've been illegally released in places and caused conflict with farmers, for example, in Scotland, where our beavers came from. We have big problems in Ireland with biodiversity and wildlife persecution, and I think introducing beavers now, for all the benefits they may bring, could cause ill feeling towards them and may go against our duty to protect native wildlife. So it's a controversial one, and I think I land on the side of, until there's proof we ever had them before, I don't think really reintroducing them is going to be the magic pill to solving our ecological problems in Ireland.
Stay there if you would, Sean. I want to introduce now Nicholas Grubb, who is a climate activist and eco-enthusiast based in West Waterford. Nicholas, you believe that beavers were here in Ireland?
Well, of course, we have no proof, but I'll give you something that indicates that we almost certainly did have them. In my previous years of activity, I was growing apples, cider apples, over the mountains from us in South Tipperary. I'm now down on the banks of the River Blackwater near Capoquin. And in the winter, you remember, we had two big freeze-ups. We had in 2010, I think it was 2010 and 2011. And in the second freeze-up, when you had ice flowing down the river here and all that, that began on the 15th of November and ended on Stephen's Day. Very, very critical information. Now, what happened? I was pruning the orchard back in February, the following that, and to my astonishment, I discovered I had what I thought were two or three albino hares. Okay? So immediately, I got onto the email to the late, great Michael Viney in the Irish Times up in Mayo, and I said, Michael, I think I've got some albino hares. He said, no, Nicholas, you have not got albino hares. The hare we have here in Ireland is the Scottish Scandinavian blue hare, not the English French brown. And if you take the Scottish Scandinavian hare and present it to cold weather early enough when the downy coat is coming out, the downy coat will go pure white. The only thing not albino will be that you won't have the pink eyes. And so we have that bit of evidence that flies in the face of, oh, no, they were never here. Now, I have a slightly more pragmatic thing. I'm coming from the point of view of our suffering wild salmon. I'm overlooking, standing up here in a room to get a good phone signal, overlooking the River Blackwater, where I brought Aina out in a boat some years back there. And it was a river that 100 years ago was yielding, with the Duke's traps at Lismore, yielding about 250,000 salmon a year. And now we're down a bit. We're down now to about 2,500 on final crash out. Now, why is this so? Well, there's three major reasons why this is so. And we can solve one of them in Ireland quite easily. And the first reason is, in the middle of the 1950s, we had two enormous ecological changes. We had the myxomatosis of the rabbit, and we had the coming of rural electrification. So can I just explain what each of those meant? Now, we know from Michael Connery's work, Michael is the scientist with Togash, we know from his work on the rabbit, going back into the war years and up to the mid-50s, we were exporting about 20 million rabbit carcasses a year. And that indicated a base population of about 40 million rabbits. Now, those of us who are old enough to remember the 50s, the country was shaking with them. There wasn't a tree standing anywhere, hardly, except on the landlord's estate. And you then had a whole lot of people who lived in rural social housing, and they didn't have any form of cooking except on what we'll call sticks. And if they went on a farmer's land, they'd get a scalp of a shovel. And so by protocol with the wicked landlords, they had been allowed for the previous 100 years to, on the summer's evening, go out with the bushman's bowsaw and harvest the alder and the willow along our 30,000 kilometres of what were our spawning and rearing dendrites. The Blackwater alone would have had 1,000 kilometres. I'm standing looking at one opposite. You know where they all are now, because they are completely and utterly tunnelled over. Now, the reason they stopped harvesting was, of course, the rural electrification, and any woman thereafter wouldn't be seen dead cooking on sticks. And she soon had a thing called an electric cooker, which came from the local ESB shop, and soon there was a woman on Telefish Erin called Monica Sheridan telling her how to use it. And so that's where we got. And so very soon, what that led to was the absolutely vital ranunculus weed, the crow's foot weed, on which the whole riparian ecology hinges, very soon got completely and utterly shaded out. And I could show you any one of dozens of tributaries down on the shore and the Blackwater where this has occurred, and we've got to let the light back in. Now, there's another way of doing that. What we can do, instead of bringing in the beavers, which we should use as a threat to the stick-in-the-mud people who aren't using their brains, what we should do instead of that is we should follow on from what IFI and Inland Fisheries Ireland dabbled at 10 years ago, which is harvesting the wood along the dendrites, okay, and letting the light in. They did a bit of that, but never took it forward. Their own scientists had said there was a major problem back 25 years ago, 35 years ago. Nothing been done about it. Now, we desperately need baseload power in this country, or electric power, and we should have a scheme of cyclically harvesting the dendrites, bundling it up on a John Deere Finland bundling machine and bringing it in to the local town, where there should be an independently operated combined heat and power plant, like in Finland, also burning plastic waste instead of dumping it in the third world oceans. And also, at the same time, we need to restore our hedgerows. We've lost 300,000 kilometres of them. They need to be enhanced and restored. And the same thing cyclically happened to them, where and stop this business of the remainder being hammered to the scut each year, so there's never a flower or berry on them. So that basically is it. But going back again to the very good things the beaver can do that we wouldn't then have done, but there is another way. We can listen to Dr. Rory Harrington, who 35 years ago started into demonstrating integrated constructed wetlands down on the River Anne, down at Annstown, Dunhill in Waterford. And in the ponds, you have these chain ponds along all the sides of the shallow streams. And you have them, they are sown with special sphagnum, and that absorbs all the phosphates and nitrates. The ponds can be sequentially drained out, and then a loader go in the next year, because sphagnum is like blotting paper, it dries out. In the loader goes, and you harvest the sphagnum sequentially, and that is used for landfill, for land spreading in depleted fields of cereal, and also for horticultural use. And so that is probably the way we need to go. But we've got to stop doing nothing. All we're doing at the moment is nothing. And soon we're going to totally have lost our salmon and trout. And I think that is an absolute sin. Now, at that, I've probably said enough. Thanks.
Well, it's very informative what you did say. But you were adamant that we could well have had the beaver here. That's what you're saying. And you think it wouldn't be a bad idea to bring the beaver in to counter some of the problems that we're experiencing at this moment.
Yes, if we're not prepared to take the broader view, like I've described about climate action, of having a national biomass scheme, if we're not prepared to do that, we have got to let the light back into our dendrites. Because I'm looking out of the window here into the tide has gone out, we've got flats here, and I see a few dozen duck. Now, 20 years ago, 30 years, 40 years ago, there would have been thousands of duck. And I remember as a child over in the River Tar, the moorhens everywhere, all the aquatic bird life, and like we heard earlier, you know, all the flies, all the caddis larvae, the freshwater shrimp, everything, all depending on the ranunculus. Turn a bit of it upside down on your knee, you've got all the freshwater shrimp and all that, and then it gathers in, the fronds gather in all the fine silts and the muds, okay, into the root system. They can grab hold of it and hold it there, and between the long fronds of ranunculus you have the clean spawning gravels, and that is the whole key to our salmon and trout population, and that is what we've got to get back to. And how we do it, either we do it mechanically in a national scheme connected with our energy targets or whatever, our climate targets, or we do it naturally with the beaver.
So there you are, Sean. It seems like you made the case for Nicholas before we brought him in by saying how wonderful the effect has been on the biodiversity of that particular area in Ealing where you've reintroduced the beaver. So even though they may or may not have been here, they would still make an impact for the good, according to Nicholas, at any rate.
I do agree with Nicholas that beavers would most likely have a huge impact in opening up the light to our rivers and our headwaters again, and probably improve things for salmon and trout by bringing back in the light, which is the base of the food chain for everything else. But we don't know what negative impacts they might have on Irish ecology. And the Irish ecology is not the same as British ecology. There's a whole range of mammals, for example, that never got to Ireland. Things like moles. You know, British people are absolutely astonished when I tell them we don't have moles in Ireland. We don't have roe deer, specifically smaller mammals like bats and voles and shrews and things like that. The Irish mammal diversity is much smaller than just across the water in Britain. So although beavers could have a really, really great impact on opening up the light to our rivers, they're also arguably not part of that ecosystem that evolved alongside them. So they could have some negative impacts on things that are already struggling in Ireland as well. They offer a very tempting quick fix solution, but my comfort level on bringing back what's arguably a non-native species is pretty difficult for me.
Sean, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much.
Sean is doing absolutely fantastic work there with the beavers, and we'll have to have him on again.